The entertainment industry has been rocked by allegations of sexual harassment and sexual assault against some of the industry's most powerful filmmakers, with most of the accusations coming from women at every level of the industry. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Today, I continue my conversation from last week with Jennifer Marin, president and founder of the Alliance of Women Film Journalists. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Chuck.
Well, thanks for holding over a second week to talk about this very important topic. There's so
thanks
much more that we have not gotten to from last week's show. And I should tell listeners they can find last week's show online at ktep.org. So on last week's program, we got into some of the allegations that have been ripping through the entertainment world, and also we're ending on a fairly positive note talking about the number of outstanding productions that are being helmed by women or about women, particularly in the streaming and premier cable and indie worlds. I know that the AWFJ every week has a recommended film, but you've also just released a list of, I think, 35 films that you're recommending?
Yeah, 35 films for Women's History Month. We had initially planned to do 31 films, in other words, one for each day in March, but we absolutely could not limit this list, so we had to do double bills for the weekend, and we listed 35 films. And this is now up on our website. And the films range from, you know, Alien, which was produced in 1979.
Right.
To films that were released this year or in 2017 that never made it up to the Oscars or that kind of awareness film. We recommend that women see these films to see how much and for kind of a support of the idea of how much we have actually contributed in the movie industry and in world history. And these are all very inspiring, very, in some cases, enraging, actually, films that have to do with women, and many of them directed by women.
Mm-hmm.
So we would recommend that your listeners watch movies this month and learn about women's history through the movies.
A great suggestion, and I think all listeners can enjoy those. I perused the list quickly the other day, and it is a list that I think just about everyone would enjoy those films. We were talking as we closed the show about the ways in which the legacy movie industry that's still based in Hollywood, still around the major studios, is trying to catch up maybe and trying to address all of this endemic issues surrounding women, disparity in the number of women working in the industry, but also responding to all of these allegations of misconduct against women. It got me thinking that, you know, Hollywood is generally thought of as a haven for progressives. And I'm thinking of it as an industry, though, it seems far behind where a lot of other industries and corporate America is as far as creating the safeguards for how employees and people on the job are treated and taken care of, and when there is mistreatment, how that is addressed. Is there something about the movie industry that has just made this culture endemic for so long that it's preserved well beyond it should have been addressed? Shouldn't we have been dealing with this 30 years ago instead of now?
Yeah, Hollywood, we should. I agree with you, we should. And, I mean, there's a lot of documentary that comes to mind suddenly called Girl 27.
Yes.
It's a documentary about a woman who was systematically raped by studio heads and their invited guests when she and a number of other women who were extras and hired as extras were transported to a ranch for the pleasure of the executives. I mean, it's been going on for a very long time. It has not been a secret. It has not been well known. Girl 27 happened a long time ago, but it was released maybe 7 or 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the film was just made. Hollywood has a unique position in our culture, in our society, and a unique kind of power. The Hollywood celebrities are our pantheon. They're our gods. They're our royalty. And we look to them for all of that kind of cultural leadership, impact.
Example.
Example, exactly. And, I mean, for youngsters, maybe not so much now, but for youngsters up until very recently, the movies, in other words, theatrical releases, were a form of education that sometimes even exceeded in its authority to the education they received in classrooms. It taught them how to behave. Mm-hmm. It taught them how to relate to each other. Now, with things opening up and streaming and all the other kinds of opportunities that there are for the release of films and moving images, that may be changing somewhat. But until now, Hollywood has just held sway. And we pay attention. We learn from Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. It's also, I was thinking about this and why this culture has lasted so long there. I think part of it, too, is that, you know, the studio system went away decades ago. And what we have now, what most people don't realize, it's really an itinerant work system where people are pulled together, casts and crews, for a few months on a project, and then they have to go and find their next project. They move from production to production, and there are gatekeepers to finding success. There are certainly a reliance on recommendations, you know, to get your next gig in 3 months. There's a heavy reliance on not upsetting the boat, not being one of those people who make it difficult on producers. And so I think all of that contributes to the culture in which these allegations have been suppressed. And in fact, in the Harvey Weinstein case, he had an entire system built to threaten and ruin careers for women, particularly who were not compliant. And the way in which our movies are made and television are made today, I think that it somewhat supports that system. And hopefully there's going to be some changes in how all of that is overseen. I know that on a positive note, the PGA, the Producers Guild of America, just released a new set of guidelines on dealing with sexual harassment in the workplace, which it's amazing that it took this to get that out there, but it's a step forward.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I mean, people like Frances McDormand stepping up at the Oscars and saying inclusion rider as the end of her acceptance speech. And there was a, you know, a sort of a standing ovation for that.
Let's talk about that, because a lot of people don't maybe know what that meant. And I think it goes to the heart of where real change is going to happen. It's not going to be something that gets tweeted about every day. It's not going to be covered by the media, but it'll be happening quietly in the contracts that are written in Hollywood. So walk us through what she meant by inclusion rider.
Well, we all know what a contract is, and we all know what a rider to a contract is. And this, she is suggesting that the guilds impose on their contracts, or impose on those who subscribe to their contracts, a condition that they sign an inclusion rider, which means that there will have to be equal opportunity for women, for people of color, for transgender people, for any ethnic group or religious group on any particular project. And that is something that's radical. I don't know where we are in terms of actually seeing that accomplished, but the fact that it was mentioned may have some effect. And I think, again, it depends on how far individuals like Frances McDormand and others who have clout in Hollywood are committed to exerting their influence by refusing to take part in projects that do not support this idea of inclusion.
And while she asked the female nominees to stand, and particularly pointing at Meryl Streep, you know, people who are in positions of power that can force these conditions on a production, I think there's a lot of men in the audience, too, that are in a position to do something about this as well. There's a lot of male allies out there, I think, in this regard as well.
I think that the allies and the whole movement, in fact, is not limited by gender.
Mm-hmm.
I think you either have a mind to create this kind of environment and understand that it's for the best, both in terms of the creativity of the industry and for the effect and the well-being of society. And then you have others who, again, are very, as you've mentioned, concerned about their own personal power, who are not interested in working collectively. The movie industry is one that requires collective work. But there are, as you say, those who are gatekeepers, and they like that position. They want to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of unlocking those gates and letting more people kind of stream through and get working.
I'm wondering, too, you know, I think a lot of people are struggling with just how to relate now to the accused. We have the most prominent example maybe in Kevin Spacey, a very popular show on Netflix, House of Cards. He was a part of, which he's no longer a part of. He was removed amazingly from a film just a month before its rollout, and all of his scenes reshot with Christopher Plummer. That was Ridley Scott's film, All the Money in the World, late last fall. How do we relate to films that contain performances or the works of people who have been shown to have failed in their personal relationships with people, and in some cases, in Harvey Weinstein's case, actually probably committed crimes against women?
Yeah, I think there has to be some kind of differentiation here between those who have actively and consistently abused their peers or colleagues or women, or in some cases men, and those who are accused and are suffering the results of accusation, where there are, you know, there are allegations, but there's been no proof, there's been no charges, there's been no further anything other than the allegations, and yet those individuals are also suffering fallout from that, and all the people around them are suffering fallout. Harvey Weinstein's demise created a huge flow of people who have lost their jobs, lost their positions, and they were innocent.
And films that were in the pipeline that may never see the light of day that are the work of talented filmmakers.
And also people who are not directly involved in the allegations. So there has to be a way to separate out what the result is for individuals.
It seems, if history is any guide, though, you know, I'm a student of classic cinema, a lot of our most cherished works of the cinema are the work, if you dig into them, the work of filmmakers who were deeply flawed and in some cases did great harm to people in their personal lives. And it's always a challenge to know how one relates to a film on its artistic merits while still grappling with the people who made it, the human beings that made those films.
Agreed. I mean, the Weinstein Company made fabulous films, let's put it that way. I mean, there's just some of my favorite films are Weinstein films. And it's painful to think that so many people suffered Harvey's advances in order to make those films. It's just, you know, it does. It leaves everybody in a huge, I think, personal dilemma. I think it's a matter where audience members need to decide for themselves what they are going to support and not support and how they're going to respond.
Well, lots to talk about, but it's encouraging at least to see that it's not just about the allegations, but there seems to be steps to put in place systems to correct those environments as well as punish those who are found to be guilty of those crimes. I guess the other positive is that, as shocking as these allegations from women have been to hear, that these women are finally being heard, and not just heard but supported, and that seems to be a huge step forward for our society as well. So, Jennifer, I really appreciate you taking the time to discuss this complex topic with me.
Thank you very much. I hope we've made some progress ourselves.
Yes. We've been discussing the upheavals and paradigm shifts happening in the entertainment industry as a result of the ongoing allegations of sexual misconduct and sexual assault. My guest has been Jennifer Marin, president and founder of the Alliance of Women Film Journalists, and you can see some of the AWFJ's recommendations and critical writing on current cinema at their website, awfj.org. To listen to part one of this conversation, which aired last week, log on to ktep.org. On Film's producer is Lauren Terrazas. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.